Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit 1 per customer while supplies last. Discount taken in time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This has been a fucking nightmare, right? I don't know whose fault it is. I'm not even blaming anybody anymore, but I did actually threaten to kill Aaron yesterday.
I'm fucking blaming him as well.
I think he's fixed it now.
Yeah, Aaron's our producer, and he what he knows about sound, you can stick up a gnat's ass.
Well, he knows
he's
a lot more about
fucking
it
fucking useless.
Hang on, he knows a lot more about it now because he's apparently
because we
it.
Kicked his ass for about a month.
But he has actually fixed it, he says, right?
Yeah.
So if this is now out, it means he has fixed it.
Yeah, okay, so hopefully I'm sounding all right. So it's been fun living in a dustbin. But
I mean, there are some people who thought I was doing it deliberately. I don't know where they would get that fucking idea
just
from.
Just so as people know, basically my microphone hasn't been working. Mike sits about 6 feet away from me. So you've been hearing me being recorded through his microphone while mine has been fucking useless.
Yes. But we didn't know that it was fucking
useless. No, we didn't know.
Because it sounded all right in
that room.
No, because
that little cunt Aaron kept saying it was fixed.
Well, he said it was fine, because in there, in that room where he sits, it sounded fine.
Yeah.
And it was somehow only transmogrified into shit when it was put through the system.
Yeah, but the moral of this story is never listen to Aaron. He's a fucking lying little cunt who knows nothing about sound.
Well, yeah, but that's like most producers, you know. I mean, to be fair, that doesn't make him stand out from anybody else.
He's a massive cunt, though, in a general
sense,
really.
How about this, right? This is from Andrew, who sent this in. He said, was TV Kev in the biscuit tin again? Come on, lads. I thought you Herberts were professionals. Yeah. By the way, the wife loves listening in. Is there any chance of calling Andy and Jeannie a pair of cunts, please?
Well, they are a pair of cunts.
Jeannie.
What's like that? Stuck in a fucking bottle or
is
something?
Is that short for Jean or long for
Jeannie? Jeannie in a bottle.
Jeannie, but it's not spelled
I dream of Jeannie.
Do you?
Do you remember that series? Starring Larry Hagman.
Starring Larry Hagman.
He went on to star in Dallas.
The guy from Dallas. Yeah, that was quite a good show, actually.
The genie was played by Zsa Zsa Gabor's sister, Eva. Eva Gabor.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember one of the great sayings of Zsa Zsa Gabor, and for those people who've never heard of her, she was this incredibly many times married woman.
Hungarian originally, by birth. The original Hollywood foreign vamp.
She was absolutely right. And she was quite sexy when she was young.
She was a good-looking woman. Yeah.
But
so was her sister.
Somebody once said to her, you know, darling, would you still love me if I was not a millionaire? To which she said, yes, of course, darling, I would love you, but I would miss you. Which I thought was rather a good line. Anyway, here we are. You keep telling everyone we're on the brink of fucking World War III. I think you've got to stop doing that because people are starting to get fucking nervous. They're getting anxiety as a result of listening to
you. If you're not fucking nervous right now, when are you going to be fucking nervous?
Bollocks.
You're like my fucking wife. She keeps saying it. Don't even say it because then it'll happen. How pathetic is
that? Oh, yeah,
that
sounds intelligent.
Well,
yeah. She'd be taking some people.
No, that's her idea. If you say it, it might happen. It's like, thank you for this debate on the international world stage.
Yes. Don't say it.
Don't say
it. Don't talk about it.
Will there be, shush! Don't even mention it. Putin's invaded Ukraine. No,
No, you've said it now.
Don't mention it.
That's torn it. You know.
I think we're in the shit, though.
No, we're not. Listen, this is going to go away as fast as it fucking came. I promise you that.
Right, okay, that's recorded.
Now, it was recorded when we made Plank of the Week a bit earlier, right? Because you claim, basically, that we are going to have World War III. Now, if we don't have World War III...
I didn't really claim that. I said that I think NATO will get drawn into it, which I suppose could be interpreted as World War III.
But here's the thing, though. If we make a bet about it, right, if World War III happens...
What are the odds?
What are the odds? And also, what the fuck? Why the fuck would I pay you if the fucking world's going to end?
Let's go down fucking Ladbrokes and ask them what the odds are. Hello. What's the odds on World War III then? What are you giving?
If it breaks out this side of Christmas,
yeah, exactly.
You get 10
I like
to 1.
This. Yeah.
And if it goes beyond Christmas, you get a lot slightly
you
longer.
You get bookies with a fucking board like down the races. Yeah. I got 4-1. He goes into Estonia.
Where's that
I got
guy,
3-1 in Slovakia.
Do you remember that guy that used to walk up and down Oxford Street with the end is nigh on his
Well. Well, my point is, Mike, maybe the end is fucking nigh.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I mean, I think the problem here, right, is that people in government in this country have actually finally got something right. I thought they hadn't, right? I thought last week they should have done more. But it looks now like as if they haven't actually not done enough. It looks like they've done exactly what they should have done, which is not to get involved directly, but to give money and weapons to the Ukrainians, right? And that way, you know, keeping a lid on it.
I agree with that. But do you think we could, along the way, you know, just drop a crafty nuclear bomb on the Kremlin?
On the Kremlin?
Take old dwarfy boy out.
Well, do you know what?
What the fuck is up with that little
cunt,
by the
way? Given how fucking woke we have now become, I bet you we couldn't fucking find the
nuclear
bomb.
That would take the fucking wind out of his dwarf sails.
You'd probably find out that somebody's hidden them. Right, some fucking anti-nuclear
disarms them because they're nasty.
They're horrible. We don't ever want to drop those on anyone, so we've disarmed them. And so if you ever do drop them, they'll just hurt a little bit.
Apparently they kill people. I mean, don't want that.
Yeah, no, we can't be.
No, but
that.
I think maybe that'd take the wind out of his fucking dwarf sails, wouldn't it? If we just dropped a fucking nuclear bomb on him.
Well, it does have a certain
appeal. It would win the war for us.
Well, no, it wouldn't.
I've fucking worked it out.
Have you not seen the fucking the movies, right? What happens when you trigger a fucking nuclear device?
It doesn't necessarily follow it goes like the movies.
It does, actually, because when you trigger a fucking nuclear device, right, the other one gets triggered over in Russia. So all the fucking silos open, and he fires a load of fucking warheads at us.
Yeah, well, we got
that's
more
why
than
it's
him.
Called mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
Do you not fucking know that?
Yeah.
Well, so we can't fire a fucking nuke at him, can we?
Well, sure we can.
Well, because then he'll fire one at us.
Well, be brave. Don't be such a coward.
I don't mind being brave. I just don't want to glow in the fucking dark.
No. You've got to show a bit of guts.
Yeah,
stand
I've got
up
plenty
for
of
the
guts.
Gun.
Listen, I've been in a fucking war zone, unlike you, when you were chasing around fucking some cunt in the fucking West End. I was actually in
that
Bosnia.
That wasn't a war. That was a civil war.
No, it was a war. Trust me. It was a fucking
a civil
war.
War.
Oh, so what's the difference between a civil war and a war?
Child's play.
So what was the English civil war then? Was that a war?
Cromwell fucking took control for about 20 minutes and then fucking dropped
the ball.
What
about the American Civil War? Was that not a war?
Issue hasn't been resolved yet.
Well, you haven't decided who's won it.
Well,
I think they've done away with the Confederate flag.
Well, I think we should go back out there. I think we should go back out there and fucking take America back.
I'm not talking about the War of Independence.
Yeah, I know, but
I'm talking about the Civil War.
Yeah, but the War of Independence was the same kind, led to the same thing, didn't it?
Yes, well, not really. I mean, it's the War of Independence was a
war. Well, the War of Independence led to the Civil War.
And the Civil War.
So my point is that it was the War of Independence. The War of Independence is what triggered all the problems. And we've got to go back in there, take America back, get it off that fucking old senile cunt Biden,
and then we'll be okay. Then.
Where is he in
he
all
was
this,
in
the by
last,
the way?
He was in the last fucking War of Independence, wasn't he? What?
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, actually, tonight, by the time you read this, or hear this rather, he will have made his State of the Union address.
Yeah.
So they're busy...
the shocking State of the Union.
They're busy fucking pumping him full of drugs at the moment so that he can actually stay awake for long enough because he's got to do it after 7 o'clock.
God, fucking cunt. Fucking cunt. Where the fuck is it? I mean, you know, obviously I don't want World War III and I...
I think you do just to win the fucking bet. That's the sort of guy you are.
Yeah, wars are kind of cool, aren't they?
Well, listen, I'm very glad that I covered the war in Bosnia because it gave me moral superiority over the likes of you.
It doesn't give you moral superiority.
It does, because I've seen people's human suffering firsthand.
So have I.
No, you haven't. I mean, just because you live in Hampstead doesn't mean you've seen fucking human
I've seen
suffering.
People ripped apart by bombs.
Yeah, in London.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah, but it's a bad thing to see.
Yeah, but
it doesn't give you moral superiority just because you fucking went and covered some piss ball little
war. I was wearing a bulletproof vest, mate.
Yeah,
that
you're a fucking cunt. Bulletproof.
Do you know what they did?
I bet you had one of those fucking helmets with press across
no,
it.
No, I didn't, but I had a car that said press on it, right?
Yeah.
But I had a fucking larder. The Daily Telegraph, right? The fucking Daily Telegraph.
But apart from where you kept the food, yeah, what did you drive?
The Daily Telegraph had a fucking armour-plated Land Rover, right? So if somebody shot them, they couldn't actually pierce the fucking armour. I had what was called a soft car. A fucking larder, right? Which was left to me by Danny McGrory. Yeah. And as soon as they came to pick me up, and it had a fucking puncture. And they were like, you're going to fix that? I went, no. Yeah. I don't know how to fix fucking tyres. And they made me fix the tyre.
Right.
Myself, right?
Well, so at gunpoint.
No, they were fellow reporters, didn't they? But they fucked off, right? I'd managed to leave my laptop at Heathrow, right? Because obviously I was very nervous about going into a war zone. And I said to Danny, can you leave me yours? And I'll just use yours and you can...
When you say you left... Sorry to interrupt. When you say you left your laptop at Heathrow by mistake...
Yeah, I put it on the belt.
Fucking hell, that's a piss off, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you, it gets worse, right?
You must have been on the plane, must have gone, shit!
I got on the plane and we're flying... I flew to Rome,
fucking
right?
Fucking hell,
I had
man.
To ring my wife at the time to go and fucking get it because I'm like, I can't leave it at fucking Heathrow because I don't know how long I'm here for. I'm there for at least a month, right?
Right.
Maybe two. So she went to Heathrow, found it. So at least we had it. But I said to Danny, I said, look, can I use your laptop? And he went, no. And I was like, what? What do you mean, no? So I can only assume he had some shit on there that he didn't want me to see.
Was he from the Daily Star?
He was from the Express. Yeah. He was the chief foreign correspondent. Okay. I was going in because they wanted to give him...
Why
like,
wouldn't he let you fucking share his laptop?
Well, I don't know. I can only assume he had some porn on it or something.
Nah.
Well, he claimed...
Trying to get all the bylines.
He claimed that... No, because he was going back to London.
Oh,
I was relieving
him. Okay.
He claimed that he had loads of stories on there. And I said, well, I can send them for you.
Yeah.
I can send them.
We've read your stories, Danny. Don't worry about it.
Well, you know, he was one of the guys, one of the first people I met when I came back to work in London. And he was going, should we go for a drink? Because I was kind of being touted as the next big thing, you know, because Nick Lloyd had basically given me the job. And I'd come back with a sort of swagger, as you do when you come back from America.
Yeah.
You know? And we went to Stanford's Wine Bar for a drink, which was a fucking god-awful place run by these two ex-boxers from the East End.
Yeah, I remember.
And he said... He said, what are they paying you? I said, it's a fucking nightmare, Danny. Absolute fucking nightmare. I said, I've been making like $200,000 a year in New York. I can come back to the fucking shithouse fucking salary, 45 grand. And he's the chief foreign correspondent. He went, I'm only on 38.
Jesus Christ.
I mean,
Jesus
this was a long time
Christ.
Ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway, so the worst thing was that because I couldn't send my stories back, I had to dictate them all down the line. And I had a sat phone in the car, but it was literally the size of this room. Because they were so big in those days, you couldn't lift it.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
needed
yeah,
two
yeah,
people
yeah.
to lift it.
Traveling light, yeah.
So I had to use the army sat phone to dictate all my stories down, right? Mm. So I'd be on the phone for sort of 20 minutes, half an hour every time I was dictating a story. Now, much more of this, you know, just new. Yeah, of course it's fucking new. I'm in a fucking war zone, you cunt, you know. Anyway, so when I got back, the foreign editor said to me, he said, we've just had the phone bill from the army. Didn't realise you were dictating all the stories. I said, well, that's all right. Well, how much is it? You went, 25 grand.
Yeah.
25,000 quid.
Because it's not actually a phone call, is it? It's like
it's
a telegram radar
yes.
message.
Well, because,
yeah.
you know, there was no fucking phone.
It's a satellite
phone.
And we didn't, satellite
and we, yeah,
phone,
and we,
yeah.
You couldn't take a mobile there and assume that it would work.
People don't realise that in those days. I mean, don't forget, there was... I date back to the time where there was no fucking way of sending photographs at all. And the only way...
except if you had a wire machine.
No, well, no. But I date back before that.
Really?
Where there was no such thing as a wire machine.
Right.
And so the only way you got a film back... so it was. It always struck me it was the most extraordinary thing. So you'd go halfway across the world, you'd get the amazing pictures, and then the next morning, sometimes I went with the photographer.
You'd
usually
have to go on a plane,
they had to go to the airport because they want you to stay on the.
You'd
have to find someone and say, do you mind taking this film back? Someone will meet you at the airport.
And don't, for fuck's sake, put it through the X-ray.
Yeah. And,
otherwise, all the pictures will disappear.
Yeah, no, exactly. And we once got got Ron Greenwood, remember the former England manager? Mm. It was a guy called Harry Page, who was a photographer when I was at the side. And
he's still around, I think, Harry, isn't he?
No, I think he's probably hung up his cameras now, but good bloke. And he spotted getting onto this plane going back to London. I think we were in Austria or something. Ron Greenwood. He said, Ron. He goes, oh, hello, Harry. He said, can you take this back? Yeah. So, and that's what used to happen.
Yeah.
And then they got these wire machines.
Yeah.
And people should remember, that wasn't travelling light. The photographer had to have a trolley, and the machinery was 6 foot high.
Right.
I mean, it was literally 6 foot high on a fucking trolley, and you had to cart that across the wall.
Well, do you remember there was always, if you were on like a royal trip or something like that, there was always one of the snappers who would set up the kind of transmission room.
That's right. They'd all borrow it.
I think they used to take turns, so there'd be one of them. There would be like a fucking massive office operation going on.
Yeah, I went to, you know, because I've done some intrepid reporting. You talk about war reporting. I've done some fucking brave reporting I went to Venice to cover EastEnders. EastEnders went for the week in
Venice edition.
They went into for a week because Dirty Den was having an affair with his mistress, Jan.
Was this before he was caught wanking on the fucking...
No, that was way before that. That was in the early days. Yeah. Anyway, we went and sort of filed all these cliches for a week. The Bridge of Sighs. The Bridge of Sighs became the Bridge of Love. We played fucking...
Love all that shit.
Yeah, we played golf on the Lido Islands.
Did you?
Yeah, we had a great week. All the photographers took 6 feet worth of massive equipment. Right. And like as you say, Mike, that one of the snappers set up the sort of transmission centre in his room. And because the lines to the phone lines were so fucking terrible to Venice, they couldn't get their photos through. Because if the line was bad, the photos came out like double. They were like double vision.
Oh, yeah.
And they couldn't get the photos through, so they had to revert to the old system. And every morning, one of the snappers would have to go all that way on the water taxi. It's about an hour to get out to the airport and find a passage and put it on. And one morning, it was a very, very nice morning, and I volunteered to do it. I thought, well, I fancy a boat ride, so I went and did it and found this person. Yeah. So could you take that back?
Right.
There'll be someone to meet. That used to be how Fleet Street worked.
One of the things when I first started travelling transatlantic, just to go and see my girlfriend at the time before I even lived there, they were always advertising in the Standard and in various different like Exchange and March and advertising for couriers to take stuff, because it wasn't just film. It was all manner of documents before they had fax machines. And you could go and get on Concorde for like 100 quid as long as you would carry this stuff with you.
That's right. I remember that.
There was never anybody sort of saying, oh, fucking...
It's basically, would you take this bomb back to London?
Well, can you imagine now? People go, sorry.
Exactly.
Has anybody given you anything that you didn't pack yourself? Well,
you go up to passengers and say, you know, if passengers say, have you got anything? Yeah, this bloke just gave me a bag with a load of film in it. Right. You know, it's like, fuck
that. That's
all
right then, no problem at all. But I mean, it was a lot easier in those days getting around. I mean, I must admit, having gone to the States this last week, a couple of weeks ago, it was almost like going in the old days. It was quiet. There was no fucking queues anywhere. It was actually really quite nice.
Yeah.
So we should look forward to that. Now, just while you're on, a piece of breaking news for you, which I'm sure will not fill you with joy.
MPs, World War III started, tell me.
No, it hasn't, but it might after this. MPs to get £2,200 pay rise from April after Boris Johnson urged restraint. So that went down well.
Fucking cunts.
Do you know what they're reckoning, though? Because they actually had an extraordinary year, supposedly, right? MPs play a vital role in our democracy, and this is reflected in their pay. It is right that MPs are paid fairly for the responsibility and the unseen work they do, helping their constituents, which dramatically increased last year. How did it increase?
I've always maintained that they don't deserve a pay rise. They deserve a pay cut.
Their pay now goes to £84,144.
Fucking hell.
And some of them still say it's not enough.
They do, and some of them say it's impossible to live on that, and that's why they need to do all these dodgy fucking lobbying
deals.
Well,
it's impossible to live like a fucking millionaire on it, but it's not impossible to live.
Well, many of them manage to live like millionaires because they do lobbying deals. They work for companies.
Well,
that's what they should
also
cut out.
Well, many of them also get fucking huge expenses, so they've already got their travel costs covered.
Loads of them hire their wife as the secretary.
Right, so it's not exactly just a basic salary and nothing else. That's a fucking outrage.
I know. And when they say that's a good story actually, that where they say, oh well, we should pay them lots more, then they don't have to do lobbying deals. What I say is pay them no more and ban them from doing lobbying deals. End of. And if you can't live on 85 fucking thousand pounds a year, you can go and fuck yourself.
I mean, honestly, this idea that we don't pay them enough money because so many of these
they're towering talent.
No, because so many of these cunts in the public sector making now six-figure salaries because they've way overtaken a lot of jobs in the private sector. And there is that kind of upper echelon, isn't there, of people like bankers and fucking, you know. Did you see that guy, by the way? You know, the guy who's the chair of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey.
It's 575, isn't it?
Yeah, but he couldn't remember how much he was
paid. Well, he said he couldn't.
He was like, oh, I'm not sure of the exact amount.
Yeah, because he didn't want to say.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
you
liar.
Can't fucking remember how
much. Of course
I mean,
he knows.
Fucker,
everyone knows how much they earn.
Everybody knows how much they fucking earn. But, I mean, the point is that we now have this whole kind of coterie of people who make so much money that it's ridiculous. And so they look at 84,000 and probably think, yeah, that is shit. I wouldn't fucking work for that. But it's a lot of money to a lot of people. I mean, the average salary is still less than 30 grand a year, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And there are some, you know, there's some talents in the world of politics, but mostly I don't see much talent. They're just a bunch of bickering arseholes who couldn't fucking get anything done as long as they got a hole in their
arse. I would say, without any fucking shadow of a doubt, that you could probably count the good MPs, and I would say, even if you didn't include
there are
cabinet.
Some good ones.
There are some good ones, but I reckon you could count them on both hands.
But the politicians are great ones for yeah, I agree, Mike. But politicians are great ones for calling each other tremendously talented, fantastic.
Right.
And you think, well, why is he tremendously talented? Why, for example, like, you know, Boris Johnson, great journalist, good writer, writes good books. But, you know, why is
well,
he?
I don't
is
know if
he
he's a great
tr-
journalist? I mean, he's quite a good writer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But you know, is he a tremendously talented politician? What is a tremendously talented politician?
I suppose part of the appeal that Boris has,
he likes
that,
a party.
Is that he likes a party, even though apparently he doesn't really go to them very often.
No,
he only goes to some
work events,
obviously. Yeah. But I think the thing about Boris is that up until recently, he was thought to be able to communicate with the kind of ordinary man in the street. Funnily enough, I was listening to a show the other day where they were talking to Michael Crick, who's just written a book
about Nigel Farage.
About Farage that basically this is a guy who's probably the greatest political communicator of his generation. I think he's probably right, because the great thing about Nigel Farage is that he does get on with people.
He's a good
and
talker.
A lot of politicians just can't do that. They just don't know how to talk to anybody. I think Boris has that.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him good.
I mean,
at what he
but
does.
That's the thing about the Westminster bubble boys and girls is they live on a different planet and they cannot fucking relate to ordinary
people. And in the words
people.
Of the woke, they're tone deaf.
Yeah.
So basically,
I mean, they only go into pubs for photo ops.
Right. And then they leave the children.
Yeah, you know,
they're
standing
David
by the
Cameron. Went into a pub and left one of his kids behind.
Yeah, yeah.
So it shows you how often
I don't know what the
pub.
Fuss was about. He's got other kids.
Well, exactly. Well, Boris, of course, doesn't.
That's the thing about that Home Alone film. I thought, well, who cares?
You'd well, left, if Boris
you got three other
his,
kids. Fuck the
of...
other one.
Well, Boris isn't sure how many kids he's got, is he?
I watched Home Alone the other day.
It's a great film.
It's a funny film.
Very funny.
I had to interview Macaulay Culkin when it first came out, right?
He's a massive drunk now,
so it was a Fox, 20th Century Fox film back in the 90s when I was in L.A., and the woman from Fox rang me up. Her name was Fran Zell.
Fran.
And she
I
was
think
a,
I remember her.
Yeah, no, she was a real New Yorker.
Yeah, I think hey, I
it's Fran
her.
Here.
Yeah.
You want to come to this? But, you know, anyway, so she was desperately trying to get someone to come along to do this sort of junket and interview this kid. And everyone's going, nah, that film's going to die. They spent $7 million on the film. It's going to die a death. There's no one famous in it. Who gives a fuck?
Right.
And I was quite new to Hollywood. So I sort of wanted to keep in with the studio people.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, yeah, I'll come and do it. And she said, oh, would you? That'd be great. You know, so I came in and I met Macaulay Culkin and his mum and his dad and that little kid, Kieran Culkin. He was about like a baby then.
He's
or
the
something.
One who's in...
He's in Succession, yeah.
Succession, yeah.
Anyway, so I sat down with this kid and I was just trying to sort of keep the PR happy and going, oh, yeah, so what's it like being a kid then? No, you know, was this your first film? And he was a good little kid. He was well-behaved and he told good stories and his parents were great. And I left and I said to Fran, I said, well, you know, thanks for that, Fran. I'll do my best, but I mean, you know, frankly, there's no one fucking famous. I said, don't count on getting much coverage on this. She said, no, I understand. I totally understand.
And
really.
He became the biggest...
Anyway, then the fucking film came out and everyone wants the interview with the kid. Fran Zell, I'm getting calls from the Philippines, from New Zealand, from fucking Germany, from all over the world. Can we have your interview with Macaulay Culkin? I made a fucking fortune.
Fucking tremendous. It's great when that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
When you just sort of happen on something and you have no fucking clue.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember how we even did things in those days. But I remember getting the opposite of that story was when I got a call from our friend Craig, who was features editor of The Express, and I was in New York, and they were filming that movie with Jeremy Irons
about
Von Bülow.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was called something. I can't remember what the fucking name of it was. Anyway, they were filming in Queens, right? And he'd been trying for ages to get access to the set, to get an interview with Jeremy Irons, and the London PRs were just not...
Yeah, he always cunts.
Just wouldn't do it, wouldn't let him. He said, any chance you could see if you could find out? And somehow I found out where it was. Somehow I found out where the set was. They were filming in this house in Queens, which looked a bit like Newport, because they couldn't film in Newport because they were too fucking rich. What the fuck was the name of the film?
Anyway, he got an Oscar for it, didn't he?
He did, and... I'd somehow found myself at the set and somehow got behind the scenes of the set.
Yeah.
And somehow got to find him filming.
Yeah.
And I still don't know how I did it, really. He finished the scene. And as he walked out, I said, oh, hi, Jeremy. I'm Mike Graham from the Daily Express. Oh, hi, how are you? Very nice. Very charming.
Yeah.
And we went and sat in the canteen. Where
so you got it.
Set up. And we just sat and
fantastic.
Had lunch, and he had lunch with all the people in the crew because everybody really liked him. He didn't like; he wasn't on his own, you know.
Yeah.
And I sat down with him for probably half an hour.
Good guy,
really nice, yeah. And they went fucking apeshit in London because they put it off the front, you know. Jeremy Irons talking about this fucking
talks exclusive to the Express, great stuff.
And that went around the world as well. Yeah, and then I discovered that actually syndication is quite a good thing. You can make quite a lot of money that way.
Well, that's why you go to Hollywood.
Yeah.
I mean, everything I ever did, I sold 20 times and sometimes rather lucratively.
Yes.
I did very well out of Home Alone. Talking about those days, we were talking about technology earlier or the lack thereof.
Yes.
So as you were alluding to, we used to have to get your copy over on a story. You had to find a fucking phone box. And then just to phone the copy takers and get it over.
Right.
And of course, what you would then do if you're on a big story and all the other papers there, you find the fucking phone box. And then you quite often see two or three reporters queuing up use the phone afterwards. And just as you'd finish, you'd just undo the receiving end of the phone and rip all the wires out. And then put it back and say, good luck, mate. Yeah, no, find your copy.
Absolutely. Reversal of fortune.
I'll tell you a story. This is one of my very first shift, or one very early shift, when I was on a local paper. And I was doing a Saturday shift at the Sunday People. And I got there and the news editor said, get in the car with Terry. There was a guy called Terry Lovell. He was like the chief reporter, right? And he said, you're going to deal in Kent. Then there was some sort of dodgy doctor who walked out on his wife and taken up with a vicar's wife or some shit like that. And so basically the Sunday People and the Sunday Mirror were in the same building. It was Tony Frost and John McShane. So we were literally driving down the M2 in company escorts, doing about 150 miles an hour, trying to get there first. And when we got to off the motorway, and we kind of got into the woods, you know, the backwater woods and roads going to Deal. So there's only one lane. So Terry suddenly screeched the car to a halt, did a sort of fucking handbrake turn and blocked the road. Yeah. So McShane and Frost from the Sunday Mirror had to come to a halt. And Terry Love used to talk like this. He's a really shifty guy, fucking hard man as well. He got out of the car and he walked up to John and Tony. And I think John was driving, sitting in the driver's seat. And he goes, fellas, what are we fucking doing? We all work for the same company. Why are we busting our fucking backsides? He said, we can get down to Deal. We can get this guy. We can do the story together. We can file it. We can have a lovely lunch. And Tony Frost and McShane, yeah. Well, why don't we do that? And then just as they're agreeing, he leant into the car, pulled out his ignition keys and chucked it 50 yards into the woods and said, but you'll have to fucking find them first. And then we drove off.
Brilliant.
They got there about 2 hours later.
Tremendous. That's fucking great.
I got another one similar story.
Oh, well, hold that thought, because I want to tell you about Manscaped this week, because we've got to give them a round of applause, right? It says that we are the people who are allowed to announce that they have got the new ultra premium collection. Now, I know that you've been trying out the aftershave, the cologne.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
You said was really good, right? So this is an all-in-one skin and hair care kit for the everyday man, right? Which is definitely us. Covers you from head to toe, literally, including below the waist, right? So here's what you get. A Manscaped premium deodorant, hydrating body moisturizer, body wash, two-in-one shampoo and conditioner, plus a free gift, which is a three-pack set of lip balm that's made up with ingredients such as vitamin E, peppermint, and eucalyptus oil.
Wow.
So, four products, plus a gift inside the Ultra Premium Collection. And also, they're vegan-friendly, so you'll be able to use them. Because now that you're a vegan.
I'm not a fucking vegan.
Well, you nearly are a vegan. It's dye-free, paraben-free, cruelty-free, so you'll like all that. And all you've got to do...
fucking
right,
hippie.
Yeah, because you are a fucking
right
hippie.
Right on, man. Right, 20% you know, we're all off, creatures together.
It's 20% off plus free shipping with the code POLICE at manscaped.com. So 20% off plus free shipping with the code POLICE at manscaped.com. And the power of attraction is now... in a bottle, so you can't really do better than that.
That's amazing. No, it's good.
And we're very happy with these guys.
I can.
The stuff that they do, yeah,
it's
they
really
send
good
us
quality.
And we actually, you know, we're not,
hand
we're, hand we're
on
not
heart,
saying,
guys. It's really,
it's
really
very
good.
Good. It's very good indeed. Now, tell us your second story.
Well, it's a story about a friend of mine, Wensley Clarkson. You know, Wensley, it was a reporter on the Sunday Mirror, and a bit like it was his first ever Saturday shift, and they sent him down. I think it was to, do you know, like the area around Romney Marshes?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. For some bloody story going on there.
There's a lot of weirdness going on down there.
Romney Marshes. Yeah. So he speeds down there in his car, and it's his first shift. He wants to impress the big national paper. He's never worked for a national. So he's charging around the lanes.
It's quite worrying, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Your first shift, you just, yeah. You know, when you get the call for the second. In those days, it's fucking hard to get under Fleet Street. But anyway... Wensley gets down to Romney Marshes and starts speeding around looking for this house, and so goes around one of those corners as you do. Fucking car comes the other day, round the other way. It's fucking, they doesn't sort of they screech to a halt. The other car rolls into a ditch.
Oi.
And so Wensley goes, do I get out? And he saw this guy clamber out of the car. And he thought, well, he's not dead. Fuck it, I've got to carry on with the story. Just drove off.
Right.
He got to the house, phoned in from the phone box to the news desk and said, oh, it's Wensley Clarkson. He said, thank God you've gone on. Some fucking idiot has ridden our main reporter off the fucking road and you'll have to do the story now.
Brilliant.
He had pushed the Sunday Mirror staff reporter off the road.
I mean, sometimes that's what gets you the break, though, isn't it? You just get lucky.
Yeah, or yeah. The big byline, yeah. You know.
Or you happen to turn up at the right time, or you happen to be there at the right time, and everybody else has fucking moved on to somewhere else. I mean, I used to find myself in a lot of situations where, because in America, the sort of the heavy crowd would come in, but because I was based there, they would all go back to Britain, and you just go back and do the fucking story a week later and get what they hadn't got.
I think to an extent, as a reporter, newspaper reporter, you make your own luck. But I have known a lot of reporters who just aren't lucky. And if you're an unlucky type, your career will not prosper.
No.
You need a bit of good fortune.
You're going to be lucky rather than good.
Yeah.
Give me good, lucky general.
Yeah, you're right, you're right.
How about this, right? A bit of a wrinkle on the Putin story. Do you know who one of the big mates of Putin is? Steven Seagal.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, he is a Russian special envoy, and he's in trouble because he came out and said that he could see both sides of the Ukraine war. He's blamed outside propaganda for provoking escalation. So
well,
I guess
that'll go down well in the States.
He'll always be welcome in Moscow. But, I mean, the States don't seem to give a shit. I told you when I was there, not one person actually brought the subject up.
Yeah, they're very insular, aren't they?
They didn't fucking say anything at all. But there's loads of pictures of Steven Seagal with Vladimir Putin. Who knew? I didn't know they were mates.
I think I did have some. He's got. He makes films over there and stuff like that. Yeah,
I quite like Steven Seagal's films. They're really bad.
They always had three words, and they were like kind of
under siege.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
People are really, really reacting badly to it. Though, here's one tweet: "So Steven Seagal, what a family guy. So when Saddam Hussein's Iraq invaded small Kuwait, was that just one family? Because he said it was like one family, Ukraine and Russia. When Hitler's mighty army invaded small and neutral Netherlands next door, that was just one family. When Soviets invaded small Finland in Winter War, that was just one family."
Yeah, I interviewed Seagal a couple of times. you got a real act.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, I'm a pussycat at home.
Yeah, of course.
I'm a tough guy on screen, but I'm a pussycat.
Yeah, well, I don't actually want to say something that might not be true.
Well, I know what you're referring to.
There was an incident.
There are incidents.
Yes, where he's meant to have perhaps used
married to that woman who was the lady in red.
Kelly LeBrock. Yeah, she was.
There were stories.
There were stories. There certainly were. Speaking of love and relationships, we should really give Matt Hancock Matt Hanjob. I mean, fucking hell. What an absolute 24 carat fucking twat.
Absolute cunt.
You know, I'm in love. And I see that Chris Whitty, who's still on the fucking missing list, by the way, they've now decided to do away altogether with the vaccine mandate for NHS workers. Now, I don't know what that means for people who left their fucking jobs because they thought they were going to have to fucking be fired. But I think it's a fucking disgrace what's going on. And I'm not one of those that's going to let any of this fucking go.
Well, yeah, because what it was, I think about, it was a month and a half ago, you no longer were going to get fired if you didn't get your two jabs.
Right.
So in other words, jab refuseniks were allowed to keep their jobs.
Yeah.
So they caved in on that. But what emerged soon afterwards, I spoke to that guy Steve James about it.
Yeah.
He was fuming, saying they're still imposing vaccine prejudices by the back door, insofar as no one in the NHS who hadn't been vaccinated was allowed to go for a promotion, to apply for a different job, to go and work in a different NHS trust. Right. They were prisoners of their current job. So if this is a lifting of all of that, it's another sign that all we needed to get rid of the COVID crisis was a new fucking crisis. Hello, Ukraine.
I mean,
it's amazing the way nobody's talking about coronavirus anymore.
It's literally disappeared from trace, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even hear anybody mentioning it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, there are still fucking people being told to wear masks in restaurants and in some supermarkets and still in schools. They've got to get rid of that. But, I mean, otherwise, it's just as if it was never here.
Yeah, I just think, you know, all this Omicron shit, it's just like it always was. Sometimes you're going to catch a cold. And I've been going on the tube every day. I've been going to football.
Yeah.
I've been going to crowded.
And you had it ages
I was
again,
at a packed,
you?
Yeah, I was at a packed restaurant.
Everywhere's packed.
You know,
I tried to get a restaurant reservation the other day. Couldn't get one for fucking love nor money.
No.
You know, because everything's booked up.
No, I was in Soho twice over the weekend.
Yeah.
Really, really jam packed.
Right.
It's
a bit cold to have the streets full of tables and chairs.
They don't need to do that anymore because people can go inside.
Yeah.
So it's just heaving, though. Mm. It's heaving. If anything, more crowded than ever.
Right.
And so, just as a personal story, I've been doing this throughout. Yes, I had COVID early on, but I haven't fucking had it. I think it's like the flu or anything like that.
Right.
Sometimes you're going to get it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And funny enough, now we're worried about Ukraine. We're not worried about it.
No, I mean, we're worried now about, well, you are worried about the fucking Third World War, which I'm not worried about either.
Well, it's the point is...
You're going to be pretty unlucky to get hit by a nuclear strike, is my view.
Yeah, within a range of about 50 square miles.
Yeah, fucking hell, man.
Fucking Chernobyl.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about Chernobyl being in Ukraine.
Yeah, I didn't. I thought it was in Russia.
Well, because it was, wasn't it?
Yeah,
at
I suppose
the time,
so.
When it
yeah,
happened,
yeah.
It was in fucking Russia. Now it's in fucking Ukraine.
But
great.
also, so it's a functioning power station again?
Apparently so.
Jesus.
Apparently there are people...
I thought it was supposed to be, like, dangerous around it.
No, apparently there are people that have been living there ever since it happened.
Yeah.
Who are fine.
You can tell them they've got four arms.
They've got four arms, they glow in the dark. Other than that. No, but apparently they're fine.
Well, cool.
You know.
Well, not cool now, but what's interesting about Putin's tactics is he wants to take all the power stations because then the Ukrainians can't fire missiles at them in case they set off the reactors.
Right. Well, we'll see. I mean, if he's actually doing what some people are saying he's doing, which is to be there for the fucking long haul, to just occupy the fuck out of it, then that's fine, I think, as far as I'm concerned. That's what they'll do. And there will be constant sort of guerrilla warfare going on for the rest of the time.
Here's the thing. You know, like, so there's supposed to be like a 40-mile convoy heading for
Well, I keep hearing
Kyiv.
40, 25, I don't know exactly.
25, 40. Let's go for 40. It's a better story.
Yeah.
According to military tacticians, this is madness because all the... It's like a traffic jam. It's all the trucks and the tanks nose to nose to nose.
So you could just blow
And you
all
never
away.
Do that
right.
in a military convoy. But my question is why aren't Ukraine bombing them from the air?
Because I think they haven't got any planes.
Well, they have. Yeah. Have they? They've got loads of planes.
Have they?
Yeah. I mean, not nearly as many as Russia.
Well, maybe they're worried that they'll get shot.
I think
they've
got about 62.
Have they?
Jets or something. Yeah.
Well, maybe they're not worried about them until they get to where they go.
Yeah, but if the point that was every military tactician has been saying is if you go above a convoy like that, you drop a couple of bombs, you fucking blow up a couple of trucks, and then the rest of the convoy can't get past.
Right. Or even at least blow the fuck out of the road so they can't get around it.
Well, you take a tank out as well, and you've got Bob's your uncle.
Yeah. There you go. Well, listen, there's any number of ways it could all go. Kevin still thinks it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. I think it might stay the same for a while. But
it's going to get fucking worse tonight, mate.
Well, listen, who could say?
I don't want it to get worse. No. I want to put that one on the record. I just fear that it will.
So Kevin doesn't actually want the Third World War.
Okay, no, well, who the fuck wants World War III?
You want fucking, you'd
would
make money.
Would be a bit cool for a bit, though.
You'd make
it?
Money if you thought you'd win the bet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
how much
right.
are we betting anyway, by the way? 1 ruble.
That's worth a million rubles, which is worth about 4p.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. Right, 1 million rubles, there we are. We'll see you next time. I'm Mike Graham, he's Kevin.
And if this sound doesn't work, you can all go fuck yourselves.
One of us is going to commit a fucking murder, and I don't know which one of us is going to be.
Oh, by the way, are we going to put something out from our live show?
Oh, yes, we are. Yeah, in fact, I was talking to Pooch just the other day, who's the guy that does all the live stuff with us, and he says that it should be ready to go in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay.
And it will be, even though he said it was a bit of a shaky floor, it will be a video.
Okay, so stand by for that, folks.
Stand by for that.
Live stream from our live show.
And also, by this time next week, we might have some more news for you, because we've also got, we're working on some live shows, but also we're working on a little subscription thing as well, which might work out quite well.
Lots of things going on. So
a lot going on. Absolutely.
Stay tuned, you cunts.
If the world does fucking end, we're all fucked, but you'll be able to listen to the Thought Police until you die.
Indeed. Which will be very soon.
See you later. Speaking of love and relationships, we should really give Matt Hancock a Matt Hancock. I mean, fucking hell, what an absolute 24-carat
cunt.
Twat.
Absolute cunt.
You know, I'm in love. And I see that Chris Whitty, who's still on the fucking missing list, by the way, they've now decided to do away altogether with the vaccine mandate for NHS workers. Now, I don't know what that means for people who left their fucking jobs because they thought they were going to have to fucking be fired. But I said, a fucking disgrace what's going on. And I'm not one of those that's going to let any of this fucking go.
Wars are kind of cool, aren't they?
Well, listen, I'm very glad that I covered the war in Bosnia because it gave me moral superiority over the likes of you.
It doesn't give you moral superiority.
It does, because I've seen people's human suffering firsthand.
So have I.
No, you haven't. I mean, just because you live in Hampstead doesn't mean you've seen fucking human suffering.
I've seen people ripped apart by bombs.
Yeah, in London.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah, but it's a bad thing to see.
Yeah, but
it doesn't give you moral superiority just because you fucking went and covered some piss poor little
war. I was wearing a bulletproof vest, mate.
Yeah,
that
you're a fucking cunt. Bulletproof
vest. You know what
they did? I bet you had one of those fucking helmets with press across
it. No, I didn't, but I had a car that said press on it, right? Yeah. But I had a fucking larder. The Daily Telegraph, right? The fucking Daily Telegraph.
But apart from where you kept the food, what did you drive? Fucking Chernobyl.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about Chernobyl being in Ukraine.
Yeah, I didn't. I thought it was in Russia.
Well, because it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so.
When it happened, it was in fucking Russia. Now it's in fucking Ukraine.
But also, so it's a functioning power station again?
Apparently so.
Jesus.
Apparently there are people...
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was supposed to be, like, dangerous.
No. Apparently there are people that have been living there ever since it happened. Yeah. They're fine.
You can tell them they've got four arms.
They've got four arms. They glow in the dark. Other than that. Cunt.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.